Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the 2020 Lizard Man Festival. This is Dr. John Stamey. I am pleased to have as my guest the one and only Janice Carter. Hey, Janice, how are you doing today?
Doing good, sitting on the porch trying to listen to the show and talk.
Well, that's good. We're glad to have you here. You're one of our favorite people to talk to you. You have quite an interesting family. You have been involved in the connection with and association with cryptids and especially with Bigfoot for a long, long time. Could you, could you tell us, kind of like from the beginning, how did your family meet up with a clan of Bigfoot? And how did that relationship unfold?
Okay. In 1944, my grandfather bought some property in Monroe County, Tennessee. And he was cutting down trees with a logging man that was clearing the land for pasture in 1947. And now, I'm not sure whether the tree fell on this young Bigfoot or the young Bigfoot was up in the tree and it came down and it fell on him. Anyway, it entered him. My grandfather took him in, thought he was a deformed child or a child with disability. And my grandmother had my grandfather put him out because he wrecked the house. And I'm assuming that this Bigfoot was about 4 or 5 years old at the time. And my grandfather named him Fox for a call name. But he put him in the barn, and a couple of nights later, this little Bigfoot's parents came and broke him out of the barn stall. He was in a center stall. And my grandfather never fixed that stall from the outside of the barn going in. And that's the way it began with my grandfather. And this Bigfoot, Fox would follow him around on the property when he was out in the garden or hauling hay or whatever he was doing, you know, out in the fields, bush hogging or whatever. And where I came in, the first thing I recall was I was about three and a half years old, and I went to visit my grandfather and my grandmother at the time, and me and my mother lived in Atlanta, Georgia. But I was up there, and they had taken me to the zoo to see this gorilla in this zoo. His name was Willie B. Now, Willie B was notorious for breaking out of his cage and getting loose from the Atlanta Zoo. So I went to visit my grandparents, and I looked across this ravine. We called it the ditch line. It ran down in behind the house. And over in the tree line, I thought Willie B had come to see me. All I saw was face. I didn't see the rest of the being, and it was Fox. I now know it was Fox that was standing across there looking at us in the yard playing, you know. And that's the first time I recall. I know that I went in and I told my grandfather that Willie B had come to see me, and he was standing across there in the woods, and my grandfather had us go inside. But when I was 7 years old, we were out picking blackberries, me and my grandfather. He'd send me back to the house after a jug of water because we were in the back 40 over next to what we call the second barn that was on the property. And he sent me back. I went to get the jug of water, and on the way back, I ran into what I thought was a tree. And it was back of his kneecap. That I ran into, he turned around. I was scared, of course, couldn't get any words out or anything else. And my grandfather just kept talking to him, telling him to back up and everything. So he did, and he went on about his way. And my grandfather took me back to the house, and we proceeded to go ahead and pick the blackberries later that evening. And the next time, that would have been like in June or July, because blackberries in Tennessee get ripe at that time. And it was in the fall or late summer that he asked me if I wanted to go to the barn with him and see his fox. Well, I thought he had a pet fox. We had pet skunks. Why not a fox? And he took me up on the top of the hill, and under this hickory tree that we have up there, or had, Sheba, which was Foxy's mate, the female, was laying on this pink blanket that my grandmother had actually quilted this blanket at the time, and my grandfather took it out and gave it to the Bigfoot.
I know your grandmother was thrilled, wasn't she?
Oh, she was thrilled. Took her that quilt and he took it out and gave it to the female Bigfoot. She had two little twin Bigfoots, they were babies, laying on that blanket. Well, my grandfather had set down a plate of food, and out comes Fox, and I was astonished. I remember thinking, well, who are these weird people? You know? I never thought of them as big and scary, but in a child's mind, I guess, you know, I was scared of them, but I wasn't scared of them. Because it's the same as my grandfather used to take me to wrestling on Friday and Saturday nights when they had it. And I had seen Andre the Giant. And I'd actually ran into Andre the Giant's kneecap only in the front, you know. And I looked up and I was like, oh, wow. He was very nice. He said, oh, I'm sorry. It's like, whoa. You know, so it's no more being scared of him than if I was to be scared of Andre the Giant, which I wasn't, you know. Just a big man, and the only difference was they were hairy, you know. And I got so that I would interact. They fascinated me. I climbed trees, sat on the top of the trees because I thought they couldn't climb the trees and get me. But they could. They're very accurate climbing trees. But I'd sit up in the trees for hours, and my grandmother would call for me, and I wouldn't answer. My grandfather would be off working somewhere, and I wouldn't answer. And, boy, when I come down out of those trees, boy, she believed in not sparing the rod and spoiling the child.
Or you would spoil the child, that's right.
Yeah. She gave me, she called a whipping, you know, and it was done with a switch, a branch off of a tree. She had this bush out front. I can't remember the name of the flowering bush, but it makes switches. It'll cut the blood right out of your legs. And she was old fashioned and disciplined, but I got my fair share of whippings. You know.
You finally learned what to do and what not to do.
Oh no, I never did learn what not to do. I'd be gone. I'm 15 years old. She'd be screaming her head off at me, and I wouldn't answer. I was out doing something, you know. But that's what started me. I was fascinated with them. I'd write down words that I'd hear them say, you know. And I'd go and ask my grandfather. I'd write them down, and he gave me these little pocket notebook things that I could write it down. I was dyslexic. I could not spell worth a flying flip, you know, but he would help me, you know, and I'd say, well, what does this word mean, you know? And even to this day, I'll do that. If I hear them say a new word that I'm not familiar with, then I'll go back and I'll ask them. And I'll go through a list of things, you know, and I'll have them point at the object that they're calling by that particular word, you know. And then it's just a learning experience.
Wow. Well, that's cool. So now you had your experiences with them, and did you ever go off to seek fortune in the real world and then come back home?
I did. In the 80s, I went to New York, upstate New York, and worked at the tracks, the racehorse tracks. In Saratoga Springs. And while we were up there, there was an incident, not with the ones I were familiar with, but I was on a 1,500-acre horse ranch. That's the only thing I know to call it. It was a horse farm where they had standardbreds and thoroughbreds. And one of the mares had foaled, and it was a standardbred mare, and she had this little filly. And the filly, we thought the coy dogs were after it because we could hear the horses scream bloody murder, and all the horses came running to the barn except this mare and this foal. And we went out, me and some of the people that were there, the place and the workers, went out, and there were two Bigfoots out there. And they were chasing this foal, trying to separate the foal from the mare. And we were out there, and it became dark, and we were followed all the way back. One of us had a flashlight with us at the time, and the guy got scared and started running. So we were left in the dark, and there was no moon, for heaven's sakes, for heaven forbid there be a moon that we could see where we were going. But we were followed all the way back out. I don't think those were very friendly Bigfoot.
Okay.
But we did get the foal, and we brought the foal and the mare back to the, you know, to the barn. So.
Yep.
And I went there, and then I came back home. Well, actually, I moved to Charleston, South Carolina, which I'm down here in Orangeburg now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was down here all the way up until after Hurricane Hugo, which we got a lot of damage with that because we were in the heart of Charleston. And I moved back to Tennessee then in 90 and was there for a while. And then in 2005, I moved. I was back and forth a lot there around in Tennessee. But in 2005, I became involved in the Erickson Project and was located to several places there in different states to do research. And wound up in Indiana doing some research there. And Alabama, let's see, North Carolina in 2008. I'm trying to think. I've just been around in different places, but I've studied Bigfoot in different areas, and not just Fox and his family. I've been out and about. I had the pleasure of teaming up with anthropologist, cultural anthropologist, the late Roy Wagner at the University of Virginia. And we did a lot of studying together out in the field, and also, you know, working on our project and trying to figure out their culture, which the Bigfoot do have culture. You know, they have a social structure and all that. And it's like, that's where I'm at. And now I'm sure, I don't know. It's like I'll say, okay, God, if you want me to do this, bring me the people to do it with and put me in the place I'm needed at. And I just end up in different places.
Okay. Well, and that's a good thing that you're always where you're needed.
Yeah, I met you.
So what? Do what?
And I met you back last year.
That's exactly right. So one thing that always interested in me, and I hope you don't mind talking about this, is you have a real interest in the language that Bigfoot use, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I know this is a wide open question, but can you tell us a little bit about the language and what have you learned?
Well, what I learned, and again, studying with people, that I'm not a linguist, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I can accurately take notes and document what I hear them say. And they do speak in English. They do use our English. We've found out now that the ones in Russia use the Slavic, or however you say it, but they speak the language that the people that they're around. So, for instance, I found that a lot of this Aryan, okay, in Sanskrit, and that has an Australian counterpart, and I'm trying to think, Phoenician. Some of it's Phoenician. Some of it is ancient Japanese. Some of it's Arabic. Some of it is Latin even.
So they've got this combination of parts of a variety of different languages, and that the sum total of that is what they speak.
Yes, and they also speak Native American, indigenous Indians dialect also here. So it's like, you know, and they even speak Spanish. Because I've heard them, they'll use the word like for fire, or they call it fuego, or however you say it. And I don't speak Spanish, okay? I don't speak, just don't understand, you know. But they'll use certain words, and it'll be from a totally different dialect. And some of them speak with an accent, even. It's like, for instance, I was studying a group up there in Indiana, in a remote area of Indiana, and they were close to Amish country, and instead of saying, how are you all, or, you know, because we use you all in Tennessee, they would say, how are ye, as a greeting. And I'm like, okay, this is, you know, this is amazing. Did some recordings up there. We did use a Marantz, first generation Marantz, to record and have a lot of vocal audio. And it's like some of them have an Irish accent, some of them have an Amish accent, some of them have, you know, a northern accent, a southern accent, you know. And down in the Alabama and the lower part of the state, they even have a Cajun accent. So it's like,
wow.
Okay, where's the difference? And the only thing that, you know, that I can attribute that to is the people that they observe, because they are very accurate at watching us. They're as curious about us as we are about them.
Okay. Well, I'm
and
glad
I've caught
that they're
them watching TV. I have my curtains open, and I'd look around, and here's about 7 heads in the window watching the TV.
Now, here's the big question with that one. Were they watching Martha Stewart or football?
They were watching cartoons.
Okay.
I'm bad. I like cartoons. I'm in my 50s, but I still like Disney cartoons. I call them cartoons. But, you know, the animated Disney things, Pixar, you know, Looney Tunes, Tom and Jerry, silly things like that. I'll put it on just for a background noise. And I've caught them watching Shrek, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My youngest, Holly, she used to love Shrek. I could put that movie in the DVD player and also in the VH player, you know, back in the day, and play it over and over and over again. She sat there and watched it and stay out of stuff that she wasn't supposed to get into while I was doing other things. And I caught him watching Shrek, you know.
Yeah. Wow, that's very interesting. Now, what about... what do they cook, or do they have a culinary sense like we do, or do they just eat fruits and berries?
No, they eat meats. They eat a variety of vegetables and fruits and, you know, a wide range. They even eat grass and grub and, you know, I'm talking about worms, nuts, a whole array of stuff. They do cook. They do use fire. It's a myth that they don't. They will make a lot of their medical brews, I guess is a way to put it.
They're potions.
Yeah, they're potions. Say, for instance, they'll make catnip tea. A lot of people don't know what wild catnip is, but they do, and they'll go and get it, and they'll crush those leaves up, and they'll put it in water, and they'll boil it for about 5 minutes, and then out the fire goes, you know. and they drink that. They'll go get willow bark, for instance, and willow bark is a natural aspirin for pain, and they'll pull that up, steep it in, you know, for so long. I don't know how many minutes it takes them to do that, but they'll use a fire, and it's not a big bonfire. It's just a tiny campfire. And a lot of times they'll go in caves and caverns to do this so that the smoke and stuff isn't detected as much.
Okay.
I've even seen them cover the entrance of a cave by packing logs and dirt and leaves and brush over the top of it, and they'll have a like a vent hole that the smoke and stuff comes out of, and it's very, very noticeable in the wintertime, believe it or not. You know, if you're, especially if you're out in their territory, you know, in the woods, it'll be in their territory. You'll go by, and here's this hole in the ground, and it's not a rat hole or a gopher hole or a back hole or any of that. It's just simply a round hole, and here's a bunch of smoke coming out, not, you know, steam like from a breath or condensation from a breath. It's actually, you look down
smoke
in there, and there's a fire down in there.
And you realize you might not need to be there.
Yeah, you do realize that, especially when they peed in places around the trees and marked their territory.
Gotcha. Well, that's very interesting. So what about your daughters? Have they had any chance to interact with the Bigfoot?
All of them have. I have three daughters. The oldest, she, for whatever reason, was leery of them. And I think the thing that got to her was when she was younger. One of the young Bigfoot back at the time, he was younger, his name was Toby. He was White, son of Sheba and Fox, was on the top of this, I don't know what to call it, except a shed that we used to pull the tractor in, like a tool shed. And he was up on the top of that metal and making a bunch of racket, you know, it's million wonders he hadn't fallen through a thing. But it scared her. She never wanted to have much to do with them. And the middle daughter didn't want to have anything to do with them. She's just like, oh, no, huh? This isn't what I'm about, you know. So she didn't interact. But now Holly, my youngest, keeping her away from them when she was little was impossible. She's, when she turned about 14 years old, she sort of lost interest in them somewhat. But when she was little, I'd have to watch her like a hawk. She'd be off and gone with them.
Wow. That's very, very interesting. So, what would you say are some of the areas of research that you're looking to move into? Because you are an active researcher. And what are you looking to get into?
I want to learn everything there is to know about their culture. What they think of us, what they think of the world, what is their belief system, what do they think of the stars, the heavens, you know, where did they come from, where are they going? You know, their legends, you know, because they have all this. Let's understand their language as best as we can. You know, what do they think of our cars? Because they call our cars a box, but then they call our houses boxes, you know, so.
Okay. That's very interesting. What's their favorite kind of car, or do you know that?
I don't know that. I think it's anything that has food inside.
Oh, okay. You know.
Because they will get in a vehicle. For instance, you've been here, and I hadn't mentioned this before, but that one night that you were here, and it's been back several months ago, that you went out and you had locked the doors on your car, and then they were unlocked. Do Do you remember that? And there was a blanket or a coat or something, and they threw it up over the into the across the back of the seat on the passenger side. Do you recall that?
Yeah. Yeah, because I think so, because it was on the, it was like on the back seat where I had laid it, and then all of a sudden it was in the front seat.
Yeah. They had been in your car. Snoopy.
Well,
I have.
You know,
it's like, I'm not going to tell John that they were in his car snooping, and he did lock his car, and now it's, you know. But
yep. Well, they didn't find anything very interesting, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they do stuff like that. It's like we had pulled up in the driveway. Me and Robin did. It's been a couple of weeks ago, and we had groceries in the car. Okay. They do. This is getting into the woo stuff, and a lot of people don't like the woo stuff. But they do cloak. I mean, they sort of turn invisible. And it's a combination of things that they can do to make themselves appear invisible. So we pull up into the front of the house. We're getting ready to unload the car. And on her side, on the driver's side, here's this whole Bigfoot just materializes out of thin air. And then he goes back and disappears. But he had crouched down, so he rematerializes. And he pops his head up over the window, into the window, and back down he goes, and back up he comes, and back down he goes, and then he's gone. Now, they knew for a fact that we had food in that car. So we went ahead and brought the groceries in and everything, and once more, we had bought Parmesan. Every time we buy Parmesan cheese, we don't get to use it because it goes missing.
Well, I like it too. Now, it may be me now, Janice.
No, it's not you. You're not here. I had bought, I know for a fact, I've got the receipt still up in the room. I had bought two containers of Parmesan cheese. Only one container remained in the refrigerator. We put it in the refrigerator. Only one of them remained. We put both of them in the refrigerator. Next day, one of them's missing. Vanished into thin air.
Well, are they the ones that got my bananas last week?
I don't know.
Because I bought some bananas at the grocery store, and they were in a bag, and then all of a sudden they were not in my refrigerator, and they were not anywhere. Do they like bananas?
They do like bananas.
These weren't those nasty green ones. These were ones that were sweet and ripe.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you they love those. It's like, and you sit around and think about it, because I just live in Myrtle Beach. I mean, not a lot goes on in Myrtle. Well, not a lot right now too goes into Myrtle Beach. It's like, you know, what are we gonna do? But yeah, I lost my bananas. $1.43, Janice. Where do I go get my refund from? Do they have a refund desk?
No, they don't.
They don't. Okay, well, let them know next time. I want my
only with certain things will they bring it back, and then it may take a month to do that.
They probably already devoured my bananas.
Oh, I'm sure. But, you know, people say, oh, well, there's no such thing as suburban Bigfoot. Let me tell you what.
Let me tell you what. There sure is. May I tell you a story? I think you'll enjoy this. Okay, are you familiar with Micah, the one that has a very particular odor about him?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He
I'm
smells
very
like
familiar with Micah.
So I'm driving in the middle of Myrtle Beach. I'm on 8-lane Highway 17. There's Bojangles and a car dealership on my right, and a Wendy's on my left. And I have the windows open because it's nice outside. And all of a sudden, I smell skunk. I said, "Well, okay." And then got the green light, drove to the next stoplight, stopped, and lo and behold, it was just as strong as it was. And there you go. I mean, I know what's normal. Janice, you and I both know what's normal, correct?
Yeah.
And I sit there and smell it for about 5 minutes. And I say, well, You got two choices. Either you can be stupid or you can be stupid or insane or just understand what it is. Mm-hmm. Now, insanity is doing the same thing twice and expecting a different result. I would say that in this instance, insanity is experiencing the same thing twice and expecting it to have a different outcome or result. And it was great. And so, you know, we certainly do enjoy interactions with Bigfoot. We certainly do.
Most of the time. Not all the time.
Yep.
And I have a reason for saying that. I have been into some areas where they were really, really aggressive. The groups that I was trying to work with were extremely aggressive, and some of them were just downright dangerous. And people will think, oh, it's a big, lovable teddy bear. Let me go run out and shake its hand. No, you don't do that, you know. And not every encounter is going to be pleasant. They can, if they mean business, they can do you a lot of harm, or you will go missing and never be heard of again, you know. And I'm not attributing everything to Bigfoot before all these people go missing, because, you know, David Pilates does a show, 411, missing people, and he claims that a lot of them have been taken by the Bigfoot. That's not necessarily so. But I did know a guy who, I know that he was telling the truth, who got between a young child and its mother, and the mother attacked him. And he lived to tell the story.
Wow.
And I was camping one time. I had my youngest with me. She was a little at the time. She's about 7 or 8 years old. And we were camping in an area over in North Carolina where we should not have been. And it's like, if you...
You should not have been there.
I shouldn't have been there. I knew better before I even went in, but I did. And I was ran out of there. And they meant business. And I'm not ashamed to admit I left everything sitting. It's probably still sitting there to this day. Because I went back and got it. I just got me and her and got in the vehicle and left.
And that was the end of that.
That was the end of that. When they come in and they start taking sticks out of your fire and throwing them at you, you're getting out of there.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's what we need to do. We need to listen to them, because you wouldn't want someone to all of a sudden walk in and stand looking over you while you're sleeping and wake up. You'd have a heart attack. It being dark.
Well,
and
maybe, maybe not. Because I have happened too. Well, we were camping out in Indiana one time in what we call Bigfoot Alley, because they love to run up and down through this pathway in between. It was an actual Christmas tree farm. And there was this area between the two planted areas it was arborvita that they planted, you know, the trees. And the Bigfoot would go up and down this pathway that was in between. I guess it was easier for them to go there instead of going through the trees to get to a pond to fish in. So there was a bunch of us, a whole bunch of people, camped out. We were having an outing, a gathering of Bigfoot researchers at the time. So we put a lantern, hung it in a tree, one of the trees, out from our tents, and we put our tents back to back, or rather side to side. We're all, you know. And we thought we'd be smart by putting that lantern out there so that we could see if they were going up and down through there in the dark. Now, we'd all proceeded to go to sleep. And I hear this noise, and it's a clicking noise, and they make a clicking with their teeth. You know, it's not actual pop, it's a click noise, like a, you know, popping your teeth together, but gently. So I hear this noise, and I wake up, and here I see on the outside of the tent this big shadow, and here comes the top of the tent with this finger coming down, and it got almost touched my chest. And I was like, oh, no. I said it out loud. I was going, oh, no, Very slowly, the finger comes back up, and the tent's rising with the finger until it gets right to the top, and then it popped back up, you know, because he let loose. I was like, oh, no, By that time, the other one had, some of the other ones, people had woke up, and my daughter had woke up, and I'm like, don't move, don't move. I don't want touched, you know.
Yeah, wow, that just sounds, that sounds pretty wild and crazy. So where are you looking to go to next? Because I know you travel some to Bigfoot retreats and things. Where are you looking to go next, Janice?
Well, what do you mean, traveling or doing
Yeah, I mean to do research. Like, are you headed to Pennsylvania to do, or like, are you headed to Pennsylvania to do research, or Northeast Georgia, or what?
Well, right now I'm just sitting here in Orangeburg. I mean, I'm at Robin's right this moment, and Robin and Pat's, and we have them come up here. I mean, you know, they're not as active here or willing to interact with us and come in close as what they used to be, and people say, oh, this is impossible. But I'm telling the honest God truth. If you are friends with them, they will follow you to the ends of the earth if you ask them to. So part of Fox's deceased, so is Sheba, but part of his family, his youngest daughter, Nikki, and her family came here to stay. And occasionally they'll come up and interact with us. We got another local group that isn't so willing to interact with us, but there's a young one that likes to play hide and seek. I guess we're the babysitters because mom leaves him in the bushes out here a lot for us to look after. And then Robin has several of hers that came here from Michigan when she moved here to be with her, and they interact. And then we've got other ones that periodically come in and out of here, you know, to visit. Just like Mike, like you were talking about him. Comes, you always know when he's showing up because he thinks skunks smell wonderful. But it doesn't. It's overbearing. You know. So right now, I'm sitting here working on a few projects in other areas of people that are with doing the research. We got dubbed habituators, the people that are actually out there interacting with them. And there's several incidents going on. There's some in Canada, a couple of cases in Canada, several cases here in the United States, and one developed in Russia, where the people are interacting with them. And I'm limited in what I can say.
Well, that's okay. No, this has been very helpful. I mean, you know, having folks that have done research about Bigfoot and been around them, I mean, it really does help. And what would you say, if you're out in the woods, what is the best advice you would give to somebody who happens to come up near or on a camp with a Bigfoot or several Bigfoot? What do you suggest? What's the best way to handle that?
Okay, so for instance, they don't always, it's a myth, you don't always see them. You don't, but if you even just suspect that you're getting paralleled when you're walking and you hear a bipedal paralleling you, the best thing is they will try to leave you an opening. They won't surround you entirely, but it's like they're sort of guiding you away from where they're at by paralleling you or getting in behind you and one on either side of you and sort of directing you out, escorting you out, you know. And just go with that. If you do happen to see one, if it's not aggressive, say hello.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
I'm serious. Say hello. You know, and you may not understand them when they talk because they sound like they're growling. It's misconception. A lot. Yes, they can growl, and if they do growl, it's the most fearful type of noise you've ever heard. But when they talk, especially the males, they have a very deep voice, which is a very gurgler. You know, it's like I can't mimic one. I just can't get that deep. But it sounds like the word hello would come out like a deep sort of growly hello, you know.
Okay.
And on the other hand, the females are very high-pitched, you know.
Okay.
But, again, the females like to whine our English words out, and I'm saying whining. It's like a whiny person or a child that's wanting something, oh, please, you know, or something of that nature. You know, for instance, I was up in an area working with a male, his wife, Bigfoot in this area, and his name is Grumpy and her name is Top Santa. And anyway, we were there and I had left out some treats. I had another person with me, and again, my daughter was with me, my youngest, Holly. And we kept asking a bunch of questions, and finally I said, "Do you want us to leave?" And she goes, "Yes." You know, whined out. And I'm like, "Okay, I got to run here." You know.
Well, so what did you do? Did you leave?
Yeah, we just got in the car and left. We said, "Okay, there's your treats, you know, and there's your food." We'd left food out, you know, and let her get them. You know, what do? Because we're not getting any type of interaction by sitting there because she doesn't want us there, you know.
Absolutely.
Please continue. Talking about, you know, what to do if you do run up on them. Most sightings are coincidental. You know, you're not out and you're not looking for them. They happen to cross the road, or you're camping in the woods with your family and you don't even know that they're out there and exist where you're at, and one of them happens to come up because it's curious and looks at you, you know. About the best thing is to don't panic, don't scream, just back off.
And be calm.
About it, back off, you know. And, you
That's
know, if one does charge at you, a lot of times they do what we call bluff charges. They will come, I mean, barreling toward you, and then they stop short. You know, they'll stop within about 6 feet away from you. The best thing to do is don't turn around and run. Again, stand your ground and back off. Don't do what they expect you to do, because they are trying to frighten you at that point, you know.
Okay.
But again, there are some of them, and there's telltale signs of when they're actually going to go on the attack, because they will start throwing, they'll throw pebbles at you, and they'll miss deliberately. But if they throw rocks or pebbles or acorns or whatever at you, and they
if they throw something substantial, that's what they have just done.
Yeah. Because
right.
The next thing, yeah, it's like people say, "Oh, here came a boulder heading toward me," or "Here came a big log toward me," or a tree. You know, that's a pretty good indication they want you out of there. And if they can't get you out of there by throwing something at you, then yeah, they will come at you full force. And a lot of people were fascinated, and they think, okay. Now, I'm not saying this to encourage people to go out and try to dig one up, because it ain't going to happen, you know. But occasionally you do find their burial mounds that are out in the woods where one's been buried. If you run across what you think is a Native American burial ground or burial ground that shouldn't be there, it's a, you know, a heaped up pile of dirt with rocks laid around it that is usually along, you know, it looks like a grave, don't mess with it, because they will come out in full force and they mean business.
Okay.
But, you know, like I said, most of the time they're just curious about us as we are about them. You know, it's like, for instance, last time William here and Henry was here, we decided we was going to go around on the back road. We were going to go actively looking at him, and we were looking through his night vision goggle thing. I don't know what camera thing. I don't know what it is, but you know, people know more about the stuff than I do. And we thought we'd look at the stars, and we stopped on the back road back here, which is a dirt road out in the middle of no man's land. And we're looking at the stars. Well, I knew that the one that Robin calls Brownie was on just right in the edge of the bush line there on the bank. You know, there was grown up weeds and bushes, trees, little trees. And William got out of the vehicle. Well, I got out to begin with, and I thought, you know, again, this is mine speaking, and this goes into the woo. But Brownie's like, you need to get back in the car or back in his truck. So I got back in, and I said, William, we need to go. Well, about that time here, we heard a bipedal coming at us, and it wasn't a Bigfoot. It was a dog man.
Oh.
And it was coming.
Brownie was right. You needed to get the heck out.
Yeah. I could not convince William to get in the freaking truck. And he came to the passenger side, and I had rolled the window down. And he says, is that you making all that rustling noise in there? What are you doing? I said, William, you need to get in the truck. There's one running up, running through the woods toward us. And I said, and it's not a Bigfoot, it's a dog man. I said, we have interrupted their hunting. And he's like, oh, no, I want to see. Finally, he goes back in front of the truck.
Shut up in the car. He doesn't want to see that.
Yeah, and Brownie is coming. I'm sorry. And I did. I said, Brownie, you know, because it was like he was going to count coup. And by what I meant by counting coup is he was going to touch William and then back off, you know. And I said, no, don't do that. And I finally hollered, and I said, get your ass in this truck now, William. And it was like he snapped out of it. It was like he was in a trance. He was just so focused on getting to see a dog man, you know. And he got in the truck, and he says, okay, now what do we do? I said, we are going to drive on down the road, you know.
Yeah, you just can't make people listen, do you? Can you?
No, it was like he didn't, I don't know how to put it, he didn't get the telltales that he should leave, that we should leave. You know, if something is running full charge through the woods toward you, it's like, okay, you don't know what for sure. I mean, we do have bear here, but not bipedal bear, okay? That's doing like 30 miles running uphill through the woods, you know? And it's like it could have been anything coming up through there toward us.
Yep.
And I hate to say this, I hate to tell on him, but he's told on himself. He got the uncontrollable urge to urinate at that time. So he did walk off to the side of the road in the back of the truck, sort of on his side, and urinate. And I'm like, okay, when you lose control and you have to use the bathroom so bad that you're scared that bad that you need to use the bathroom, you need to leave. You know?
Exactly. Boy, these are some crazy but interesting stories, Janice. And, you know, we really appreciate you being here with us on the 2020 Lizard Man Festival to talk about the Lizard Man and talk about cryptids such as the one and only Bigfoot. So I want to thank you very much for being here with us. And we've had a good time. And we'll be back at you soon. Okay?
All right.
Well, look, thanks a lot. And you take care,
thank
okay?
You. Uh-huh. You too.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Sure. Bye-bye.